Atlantic Sea.
Okay, this is my music, the music that I've chosen to place myself in a particular place and to share with you. Just to clarify one thing for my American listeners, I'm not taking sides in the American Civil War. The piece of music...
And he put his arm around her, he smiled as fierce as a 40-pounder. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
I'm sure you Americans know was the unofficial anthem of the Confederacy side in the American Civil War, and it was written in 1859. And I play it in the spirit of the same generosity that many Americans after the Civil War found in order to heal their country. But I play it for you in because it means an awful lot to me, and it places me at a particular point in time in my life. Now, this will be distinctly unknown music to Irish ears, and I haven't a clue what about the rest of you. Certainly it came as a huge shock to me when I discovered quite how much I owed to the music of the American Civil War. I'm now looking in my hands at Robert E. Lee Remembered. And Robert E. Lee was the one of the greatest military generals of all time. Of all time, not just the Americas. But Robert E. Lee freed his slaves before the Civil War began. So just to complicate the whole thing. And he was once offered by Abraham Lincoln a position. But he actually, after Virginia seceded from the Union, after the secession, he actually went and headed the other side. So what can I say to you about the music and where it places me? But before I do that, let me just play you another little bit. That's the end of the Bonnie Blue Flag. Maryland, my Maryland. Now, okay, I'm clearly nostalgic for some reason, and just to make me seem even more absurdly ridiculous and time-bound, I'm on the closest thing at the moment, as I'm speaking to you, I'm in the closest thing I could get to a military vehicle. I'm actually driving around the estate where I live in Cork in Ireland, in Glenmire, in my car. My daughter has gone into one of the houses, and I've taken advantage of her not being here to sort of project myself back into the 1860s in America, which, in case you have the slightest doubt, was one of the most bloody and horrific civil wars in Western history. So it also was the period in time which I chose to write about when I started my three-act play based on the life and times of Walt Whitman and Peter Doyle. Now, Walt Whitman is well known, Peter Doyle is not, and if I simply tell you that Walt Whitman, my great, great poetic hero, my number one, I have to say, but Walt Whitman went to tend to the injured. He went to tend to the injured during the Civil War. He didn't just sit back on his arse and do nothing. He actually did everything he could during the Civil War to care for people. And he got his hands dirty, if you like, as in effect a nurse. And he wrote out of that a magnificent series of poems, which is highly unknown, called A Drum Tap, and that's another story too. I, having decided that I was called to write the play about Walt Whitman and Peter Doyle, decided I needed to immerse myself in the music of the time, because I decided that I would, as part of the characterization of Peter Doyle, I would make him a whistler. That is, a guy who was capable of whistling all of the music of the American Civil War. Now, I'm a little slightly sort of out of kilter because I'll declare that if I, you know, imagine myself living back in those days, I'm on Abraham Lincoln's side. Abraham Lincoln is right up there alongside Nelson Mandela in my book as the greatest men who ever lived. So, and incidentally, one of the reasons that, you know, enamored me more to Abraham Lincoln was the discovery that he suffered from bouts of severe depression, even after having secured the nomination for his party. He collapsed into a very, very severe bout of depression, and that has big parallels with my own life. But back to the music again. Okay, thus ends Maryland, My Maryland, and you're now going to hear something you well know. The yellow rose of Texas, you'll quickly see that I'm not a singer, but I'm absolutely love music. And it isn't that is the greatest song. If I had the other side's music here, the main thing is that it's song, it's people together fighting for a cause that they believe in. It's interdependence, collaboration, it's integration, it's conflict, it's confrontation, it's all the things that, you know, to be truthful, make me the human being that I am and have helped fashion me the way I have turned out. Now, I'm playing this in a car, and I have a CD in my hand, and to be truthful, I'm not sure. This is almost like random play, because I don't know what's coming next. I haven't always been a lover of America. I was a child of the anti-imperialist movement, and I was as critical of the United States of America as anybody could have been. In fact, at one stage in my life, I boycotted the American landing on the moon in 1969 because I was totally disenchanted with America. And let me just, to finish the story, I'll own up to the fact that when Obama became president of the United States, I finally got around to saying, you know, I changed a lot in the meanwhile, a lot had changed, but I finally got around to saying, in effect, we are all Americans. In other words, I fell back in total, absolute love with America. And that's a huge journey for me, and that's another story. But back to Walt Whitman and Peter Doyle. Whitman and Doyle were on one side. And there's lots of stuff I can't tell you because I haven't got time now. But I'm a playwright who's only completed one play, but has actually almost completed another. And the one I've almost completed is the three-act play. And the three-act play I'm talking about, which starts the evening that Whitman and Peter Doyle went back to Whitman's flat after meeting in Washington on the tram, the opening scene of it has music from the American Civil War whistled by a very cocky young Peter Doyle, as he comes up the stairs into Walt Whitman's apartment. Now, I have done a number of things. The first play I ever wrote, I wrote without ever doing any plotting or characterization. And I did it out of the dialogue. And I made it up. I'd never written a play before, and I've never studied English drama in any form in my life. But I decided this is how I'll write a play. The second play I've written, which is not quite finished, I began the other way. In other words, I began with characterization. I began by immersing myself in the characters of Walt Whitman and Peter Doyle. I immersed myself in their background. I did almost the equivalent of a method actor. And I basically then did the plotting of the play. And I can tell you that for the photographers among you, you might be interested to know that one of the scenes in the play has Whitman and Doyle being photographed for, in effect, their wedding photograph. Walt Whitman scholars know exactly what I'm talking about. People are mad keen on American portraiture in terms of photography will know that, or may know that, Peter Doyle and Walt Whitman were photographed on a number of times in a studio. And those of you who are interested in the technology of photography will know damn well that the equipment that they used back in those days meant that you had to stand still or sit still for a very long time before the photograph was taken. And I have a whole act of the play, a whole scene of the play set in a photographic studio in the 19th century with absolutely every single bit of paraphernalia that would have been used at the time. So why am I telling you this? Well, here's some more music. Here's some more. By the way, I'm still going round and round the housing estate.
Joys that we've tasted may sometimes return, but the torch, when once wasted, how can it burn? Splendors now clouded, say, when will he shine? Broke is the goblet and wasted the wine.
Now, in the corner of my office in Glanmire lies the pile of papers that I was working with while I wrote the play. Incidentally, the first draft of the play was the first draft of the dialogue of the play was lost when I lost my mobile phone and all the dialogue I had written on the mobile phone, and rather stupidly had not copied off. It was before the days of syncing and all that. But anyway, it was lost. But, you know, actually it doesn't really matter, because once you have characterized and plotted a play, dialogue is downhill, in my humble opinion. I speak as somebody with limited experience of writing plays. But anyway, the whole point about this is that in the corner of this office, and that is why this music places me in a certain place, in an office in 2007 and 8, all those papers are there. I put them aside very consciously on the grounds that it was not a project I could work on while I was trying to do a number of other, even bigger projects than writing the three-act play. Now, the three-act play also, just to tell you how ridiculous it is and how huge it is, includes Oscar Wilde. Yes, you may or may not know that Oscar Wilde went to America and came back and said, "I kissed the lips of Walt Whitman." Anyway, look, there is a story beyond any story that I could tell to do with this. And Walt Whitman went from being an absolutely despised and reviled poet in America to being the grandest poet of all of the Americas. And, it's terrible. It could easily be overcome with emotion because of the journey. Leaves of Grass and the journey involved in Leaves of Grass. We need some music to get break up.
Holly Hopkins, you treat me so, you treat me so.
Oh, cruel, cruel Tommy Duncan, to tease me so, to tease me so.
Polly Hopkins and Tommy Tompkins.
When we are married, Polly Hopkins, which we will be, which we will be.
I hope the next day Tommy Tompkins to marry me, to marry me.
Now we'll fast forward to this wonderful. Composed by William S. Hayes. The Battle of Shiloh was, and I'm really paraphrasing what's written in front of me on the sleeve notes of this, was one of the most bloody battles in the American Civil War. This song became an incredible success. Led to loads of songs about dying drummer boys, and you know several of them. I bet you there's a song about the dying drummer boy in the Battle of Culloden. Come on, Scots, give us some replies on this theme. Johnny Shiloh was a real person. Johnny Clem was his proper name. That's where he beat his first drum roll in battle. Now let me fast forward you and try to find the one that my daughter wouldn't let me stop playing as soon as I played it to her. Now this is a... Well, this is... I think it's Weeping, Sad and Lonely. No, it isn't. It's the vacant chair. See? Now I want to take you to my daughter's favorite song. Goober. G-O-O-B-E-R. This was written by P. Nutt.
When the horsemen pass us, the soldiers
I kid you not. P. N-U-T-T.
Mister, here's your mule. But another pleasure enchanting her the knees is wearing out your grinders, eating
I better sign off with an incredible thanks to the person who invented this topic. I have now got 7 seconds left and I've used every second, but you have been a wonderful help to me in telling my autobiography.